So for the last few months, we've been talking about church government. We've ended by talking about the specific positions that are appointed through the Bible, our understanding of the Bible. So we've talked about elders, we've talked about deacons, we've also talked about apostles. And today we're going to begin talking about evangelists. We'll talk about evangelists today and for the next 2 weeks. We've already said a lot about evangelists, but I think it's good for us to go ahead and finish on this topic and spend a lot of time reviewing some specific material from the Bible that teaches us how we should understand the office. And the office of evangelists, or the position of evangelists, is different than that of elders and deacons. And the way we have to approach this is a little different because it's not described with the same specificity that we find for elders and deacons. So for evangelists, let's begin with this question. What individuals in the Bible do we know for certain are evangelists or were evangelists? And there's only a few, really. Okay, we've named three. So far as I know, only two of those are specifically called evangelists. So let's go over to Acts chapter 21, verse 8. Acts chapter 21, verse 8, and someone, if you could just read that. We're going to ignore the context for now and just notice who's talked about and how they're identified.
On the next day, we who were Paul's companions departed and came to Caesarea and entered the house of Philip the evangelist, who was one of the seven, and stayed with him.
Good. So Philip is identified as an evangelist. And, of course, what's it mean when it says that he was one of the seven? Yeah, he was one of the original seven men appointed as deacons, or to do the kind of work that deacons do back in Acts chapter 6. So that's one. We know for sure Philip was an evangelist. Who's the second person that we know we can feel pretty comfortable was an evangelist? Timothy. So let's go over to 2 Timothy chapter 4. I think this is fairly clear. I guess if someone wanted to make an argument here that Timothy wasn't necessarily an evangelist, I guess they could. But it seems pretty straightforward. 2 Timothy chapter 4, someone read verse 5, please.
But you be watchful in all things, endure afflictions, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry.
Good. So it said Paul charges Timothy to do the work of an evangelist. And that's sort of an interesting way of saying it, because there's lots of things that evangelists do that we'll talk about later. But there's lots of things that evangelists do that really anyone could do. There's only a few things that evangelists do that only evangelists should be doing. But Paul does tell Timothy, do the work of an evangelist. And he says, fulfill your ministry. What does that say about his work as an evangelist?
That was given to him by prophecy.
Yeah, it was given to him by prophecy and by the laying on of hands of Paul and a council of elders.
It seems to say there's a specific thing that evangelists do.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I read it. He says, do the work of an evangelist, do your job, fulfill your ministry. You have a job to do, do your job. And his job, his work, his occupation was as an evangelist. So those, technically speaking, are the only two people in the Bible that are identified specifically as evangelists. But there's a lot of other individuals that we assume to be evangelists for various reasons. So who are some other individuals that we think are probably evangelists?
Barnabas.
What's that?
Titus.
Yeah, Barnabas, Titus, Tychicus.
Silas,
possibly. Yeah, definitely. So let's start with Titus. I think we've got the strongest argument for Titus. Why do we think that Titus was probably holding the position of evangelist? Yeah, and that's, I think, the strongest argument there. So Timothy, we understand to be an evangelist. Part of his work was to appoint elders and deacons. And that was a unique work given to evangelists. Titus is never specifically called an evangelist, but in Titus chapter 1, verse 5, he's also given the work to appoint elders in local congregations. So unless someone else besides an evangelist has the authority to appoint elders and deacons, we have to assume for sure that Titus was also an evangelist. And that's the easiest explanation. Titus was given the same kind of responsibilities as Timothy. Timothy was an evangelist, so it's easy and comfortable to assume that Titus was also an evangelist. So the other men in the Bible that we think might have been evangelists, why do we think that?
Well, we visit Paul a lot. We traveled with him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fits in. There's lots of men in the Bible who were doing the kinds of things that evangelists do. And there's at least a few men who were doing some things that we know were unique to the role of evangelists. So we know that Paul appointed elders, that Timothy appointed elders, that Titus appointed elders. Do we know of anyone else who participated in the appointment of elders?
I think Paul and Barnabas, I think you could say, wouldn't you?
I think so. If we go back to Acts chapter 14... I hope it's not exhausting reading the same verses all the time, but there's just so many ways to use particular passages. They make different points at different times, but Acts chapter 14, verse 23, if someone could read that, please.
Paul and Barnabas appointed elders for them in each church, and with prayer and fasting committed them to the Lord in whom they had put their trust.
Very good. Thank you. So, verse 23, when they, that's Paul and Barnabas, appointed elders in every church. I don't think that the Bible would read they or Paul and Barnabas appointed elders in every church unless it's true that both Paul and Barnabas were participating in that appointment. So I think Barnabas definitely was serving as an evangelist. So one thing that Bob talked about for me a few weeks ago when we were discussing apostles is that there's a group of men in the Bible who are called apostles that we know were not part of the original 12 apostles. So does anyone know some of those individuals that are called apostles in the Bible but were not among the original 12, not Matthias, not Paul?
Barnabas.
Okay, Barnabas is one of them. So still there in Acts chapter 14, verse 14. Someone could read that, please. Oh, excuse me. Not Acts 14, 14. Oh, that is right. I'm sorry. Yeah, if someone could read that, please.
But when the apostles, Barnabas and Paul, heard this, they tore their clothes and ran in among the multitudes crying out.
Very good. So let's pause and think about this for a minute. Why would Barnabas be called an apostle? Let's just assume that we've got this right and that Barnabas is not an apostle in the same capacity as the original 12, Matthias and Paul. Why then is he called an apostle?
Well, he and Paul both were sent by the church.
Mm-hmm. Right, so you remember what it means, what the word apostle means. The word apostle, what's that? Yeah, someone who is sent, and specifically they're sent with authority. You know, anyone can be sent, but only an apostle is sent with the authority of the sender. Another word for apostle might be delegate or agent. Again, it's a person who's sent with the authority of the person who sent them to execute business or the transaction of another person. So that's why it's sometimes appropriate to refer to a person like Barnabas as an apostle. And what I'm getting to with all of this is I think it's possible, and I'm not completely sure about it, but I think it's possible that sometimes when the Bible uses the word apostle to identify individuals in the Bible, it might be referring to people who are evangelists. So an apostle is someone who's just sent out with authority. What's an evangelist?
Sent out with
authority. Yeah, it's a person who's sent out with authority. And so the 12 apostles, who were they sent out by?
Jesus.
They were sent out by Jesus with authority from Jesus. So that makes sense. Jesus is also called an apostle in Hebrews chapter 3, 1. So who's he sent out by?
God.
So that makes sense. Jesus is sent out by God with authority from God. The 12 apostles are sent out by Jesus with authority from Jesus. And so it kind of makes sense that evangelists might also be called apostles in the sense that they're sent out by whom?
The church
with authority from the church. So the language makes sense anyway. And so that's why when I read about individuals that are called apostles, I'm not bothered by that because the language makes sense. So Paul and Barnabas are called apostles. Is there anyone else that you can think of who's not Paul, not Matthias, not among the 12, but also called an apostle? So another place where this is possible anyway is over in Romans chapter 16, verse 7. If someone could read Romans chapter 16, verse 7, please.
Greet Andronicus and Junius, my relatives, who have been in prison with me. They are outstanding among the apostles, and they were in Christ before I was.
Very good. So there's two people named here, Andronicus and Junia, and it says they are of note or outstanding among the apostles. That could mean two different things. So what could it mean that they are outstanding or of note among the apostles?
Well, it could mean that these were two men that were very good at helping the apostles or
right.
very well recognized as helpers of the apostles.
Right.
Or it might mean that they are called apostles.
Yeah, so it could mean either way. And I don't have a good way of identifying which it is. I think most people take this to mean what you just said, Bob. That these are people who have a very good reputation with the 12 apostles. They've been noticed and have a strong reputation with the 12 apostles. And then the other thinking, which I'm comfortable with, is that these are especially notable minor apostles, is what someone might say, or evangelists. So I'm comfortable either way, but Andronicus and Junia maybe here are identified as apostles or what we would call evangelists. Another place where Barnabas is called an apostle is 1 Corinthians 9:5. Again, I think it's probably just referring to his work as an evangelist. And then one more person, if we could turn over to Philippians chapter 2, verse 25. Philippians chapter 2, verse 25, if someone could read that, please.
Yeah, I consider it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my friend and my brother, fellow worker and fellow soldier, but your messenger and the one who ministered to my need.
Okay, so that doesn't use the word apostle there. What do you think is the word that could be translated apostle?
Messenger.
Messenger. So it is the exact same Greek word. I'm not sure why the translators of the New King James used the word messenger here instead of apostle. Just out of curiosity, someone who's reading something other than King James or New King James, what's the word there?
Messenger.
It does say messenger? Okay. Lana, same thing in the NRSV? Okay. Yeah, so that's a perfectly appropriate word. I just don't know why translators use the word messenger instead of apostle when in a lot of other places it is the word apostle. But anyway, Epaphroditus is also called a messenger or apostle, and perhaps that's meant to mean evangelist.
That was specified, though. You're
yeah.
an apostle, so it wasn't God's
or Christ.
Yeah.
He's talking to the Philippians, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think about it that way, but that is an interesting point.
So that makes it more specific.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that enhances the point that maybe he's either sent out, maybe sent out by the Philippians, or maybe he was sent to the Philippians? That's interesting. Yeah, that's a good point. So the whole reason I'm bringing that up is there's lots of other individuals in the Bible that might be identified as an evangelist. These people who are called apostles that we know aren't of the 12, aren't Paul, aren't Matthias, they may also be recognized as evangelists. So by way of introduction, another topic that we needed to discuss, I don't know if you've ever heard of this before, but there's lots and lots of people who question whether or not the office or position of evangelist is a real and continuing office. So there are some individuals in the churches of Christ and lots of other denominations who would question whether or not the position of evangelist is even an actual position in the church, an appointed position in the church, in the same way that the apostles were appointed, in the same way that an elder or a deacon is appointed. So that's one thing we need to talk about. Is this even a real appointed position in the same way that an elder or a deacon is appointed? And then, like I said, is this a continuing office? There are some people who accept that evangelists certainly were appointed in the first century, but whatever their work was is no longer useful today. And so there's lots of people who would say that this is not a continuing office.
Most of them have a problem with the word appointed.
Yeah, and that's another topic that we'll have to talk about. And we've already talked about some, is even if it is a real and continuing position, does it have any real authority in the same way that an elder has authority over spiritual matters and that deacons are appointed over physical issues? Bob?
It Is there any connection on the Greek word for evangelist and apostle? Is there any connection there at all?
Mm-mm. No. Okay. No, they have similar meanings, but no, the words don't share any of the same roots. So let's begin by talking about this. What do you imagine are some of the reasons that a person might object to the idea that the position of evangelist is actually a position, or objections to the idea that the position of evangelist might be a continuing position in the church? What do you imagine might be some of those objections?
So, one of the struggles is that this issue of we have congregations which are autonomous, and yet the way we see evangelists work in the New Testament is that they work across congregations. And I think that could be an issue for some.
Yeah. And it's interesting when you read this perspective from denominational churches, their perception of the work of an evangelist is completely different than, usually very different than the way we would understand it. And so that's actually part of the reason that a person might object to the work of an evangelist. So what are some other reasons?
Well, of course, in the churches of Christ that are against that, their claim is that it's giving one man authority over the church when it should always be a plurality.
Sure.
That's their argument.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So let me plant a few more ideas about why some people object to it being a real and or continuing office. So, what do we have for elders and deacons that we don't have for evangelists in the Bible?
Plurality. Is that what you're saying?
Qualifications.
Qualifications is what I was thinking of. Well, we don't have a list of qualifications.
I don't know if that's entirely accurate. I think there is a list.
Sure. Not in the same way that we have it for elders and deacons. Would you agree with that?
Right. Not spelled out, but, are you intending on talking about that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, next week we will talk about the qualifications for evangelists.
Okay. I mean, I think there's a passage that we can look to find a pseudo-list.
Yeah. Yeah. So I absolutely agree that there are qualifications for evangelists. But I think we can also say that we don't have such a precise, well-defined list of qualifications like we do for elders and deacons. You know, we go to 1 Timothy chapter 3 or Titus chapter 1. We've got a very short, concise list of specific qualifications that are meant to be examined when considering a man for the appointment to elder or appointment to deacon. We don't have the exact same kind of list for evangelists. So that would be one objection. A person might say, well, we don't have a list of qualifications like we do for elders and deacons. If we don't have that list, maybe God's telling us that you don't need that list because you don't need evangelists. So that's one thing that a person might say.
The office, we call it an office of the evangelists. We call it an office of elders. I think that the word work fits better.
Sure.
The work of an evangelist. If you're going to have a work evangelist like Ben said, then you've got to have some regulations. And I don't even know if the word office is not in the Bible, is it?
No. The only word that's similar, the reason I'm okay using the word office is, one, because it's convenient, we all understand what it means. The other thing is in 1 Timothy chapter 3, if a man desires the position of bishop, so I agree it's very appropriate to refer to their responsibilities as a work, but I'm also comfortable calling it a position, if that makes sense. I know exactly what you're saying, though. I know exactly what you mean. Another reason that a person might object to the real and continuing existence of this office, or this position, this work, is they might say that we don't have a specific procedure for the appointment of people to the office or position of evangelist. So we'll talk about that, but a person might say that we don't have a specific procedure. And then one more reason that a person might object is that we have limited extra-biblical references with the clarity that we have for elders and deacons. So do you remember, I don't know, it's probably been a month ago or so, Ben was teaching the class for me, and you all studied extra-biblical references to church government. And what are the two positions that are mentioned over and over and over again by people like Irenaeus, like Ignatius, like Polycarp? What are the two positions that are mentioned very clearly over and over again?
Bishop.
Yeah, bishop or elders. Yeah, now Ignatius throws in bishop as if it's separate than the elders, but we've got the bishops or elders, and then they talk about deacons a lot. And so a person might say, well, if these church fathers, these apostolic fathers, if all these extra-biblical resources are constantly mentioning elders and deacons, why don't they talk about evangelists in the same way? So a person could say that. We'll talk about those things later. But then let's talk about the other side, not the objections, but what are some of the reasons that you think that evangelists are a real appointed office and that evangelists, that position, is a continuing office? What are some things that come to mind? Ben?
So, we looked previously at the appointment of elders and deacons. That process requires someone to do that.
Yeah. That's one of my number one questions. So, there is clearly a biblical procedure for appointing elders and deacons. You can look at Titus, 1 Timothy, in Acts chapter 14, and in all of those cases, elders are appointed by evangelists. Is there any examples of anyone other than an evangelist or an apostle appointing elders and deacons? There is not. And so if we take away the position and the work of an evangelist, we then have no biblical example of how to appoint elders and deacons. So that creates a real problem. And so churches that don't have evangelists and don't follow the biblical model of using evangelists to appoint elders, they have to create some other method to do that that doesn't have biblical support. So that's one big problem. If you take away evangelists, you suddenly lose a procedure to appoint elders and deacons. Ben?
So I'm not sure how this fits with the previous question, but I suspect you'll address it, but within the churches of Christ, there's some confusion about what exactly an evangelist is.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes that's misunderstood to mean a full-time preacher that stays at a location. And that, coupled with this idea that the evangelist is the one to appoint elders, you run into an interesting problem where a man who is doing the teaching all the time is the person appointing the leadership, and you run into this problem again that Duane was mentioning of where you have a singular person controlling all of the authority.
Sure. So we'll definitely talk about some of those things, mostly when we get into the responsibilities of evangelists. Duane?
Yeah, on your question that we're up over on, I think to me that this even almost stronger than that is the fact that evangelists are included in Ephesians chapter 4 as equipping the saints.
Mm-hmm.
The work of equipping the saints is so important. And they're the main part of that.
Yeah. Yeah, let's go ahead and look there. That was a verse I wanted to look at. We've looked at it a dozen times, but this is a good point to make. So like I said, there are some people who would question whether or not there is such a thing as the position of an evangelist. They would say that there's the work of an evangelist, that there's evangelistic work that anybody could do, but there's no such thing as a position, a person appointed to do evangelist, to be an evangelist. But when we go over to Ephesians chapter 4 and look at verse 11, let's compare, evangelists is in this list, but let's compare the evangelist to the other positions that are mentioned here. So someone just read Ephesians chapter 4, verse 11.
And he himself gave some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, and some pastors and teachers for the equipping of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ.
Right. So the fact that prophets are listed here sort of muddies things a little bit. But when we talk about the others, apostles and then pastor teachers, which we understand to be elders, these are specific positions of authority in the church, right? This isn't just a work that anyone can do. These are specific people who have been called or appointed to a work. And even prophets fall into that category, right? Could anybody be a prophet?
Yeah.
No, a person had to be given that gift. So you could say they were called to be a prophet. This wasn't just a work that anybody could partake in or not partake in. It was a person who was appointed to and called to do a specific work. And so when you look at it that way, I'm uncomfortable with saying that evangelists aren't like those other offices because they're all listed right here. These are the four positions in the church that were making major spiritual contributions to the building up and edifying of the church. So I agree with you, Duane, that because they're in this list, they're in the same list as apostles and prophets and elders, I have to believe that it's a real appointed position just like the others.
But in this list, is all these still working?
No.
So I could see people say, well,
right.
So we don't have prophets, and we don't have, I can see people saying that.
Yeah.
We don't have evangelists.
Yeah. Ben?
So the follow-up question would be, well, why is it that we no longer have apostles? Well, their work is no longer necessary. Why do we no longer have prophets? Well, their work isn't necessary. There's no means by which to appoint either of those two people.
Right.
Then you get to the question of elders, and the answer is, well, of course we still have elders. Why? Because their work is necessary. Well, then what do we? How do we answer that about evangelists? And
yeah.
I think we can say, yeah, their work is still necessary.
Some people would say no, though, because there are some people who think that evangelists were simply kind of sidekicks for the apostles, which when we read about their work, I think we're going to see that's not the case, but that's why a person still might object to it. Eddie?
We find in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 where I guess you could include apostle for it too, but the prophets, those gifts in it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so just like Ben said, a person could say, well, see, apostles are gone, see, prophets are gone, so why can't we say evangelists are gone? And the answer to that is just what we talked about a minute ago. Evangelists were given, part of their responsibility is to appoint leadership in congregations, and congregations still need that leadership, and so we still need a procedure for doing that.
And their work is, that word means a proclaimer of the good news. We still need that, that needs to be done.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, we're not going to stop there with the conversation, but we are going to do that for now. There's lots of things that we can talk about, and I think we need to address some of those questions. In our last 10 minutes this morning, let's introduce, well, first let me ask, is there anything else that anyone wants to say about, just in general? Yes, Art.
Well, if you just took the definition of an apostle as a messenger, we could have apostles today. What's the distinction between the apostles then and the apostles?
Yeah, apostles then were sent out directly by Christ, and apostles today, Christ, there's no Christ here for to be sent out. Is that what you were thinking?
Sort of, but there are a lot of denominations that have apostles.
Right, yeah.
And they claim that they can do special things.
Right.
So we would have to make that distinction in our conversations with them.
Yes, yeah.
We could have apostles, but they don't have the same office.
Right.
The same works.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why, I don't know if this is exactly what you're saying, but that's why when I look at the Bible, I think it's good to notice that men who are called apostles sometimes weren't of the original 12. And so just like you said, they might have been called apostles, but they're not serving the same capacity or doing the same thing that the original 12 were. So, thank you. If there's nothing else kind of on that overview of evangelists, the two things that we'll talk about over the next few weeks is the three things we'll talk about: the responsibilities of evangelists, the appointment process for evangelists, and then just some other miscellaneous topics related to evangelists. In the last 10 minutes, we can begin discussing the responsibilities of evangelists. So I'd like to open that to you. What are you, looking at the Bible, what do you identify as being the work of evangelists? That is broad, but I think that's right. I think that's fair to put that up here. Yeah, I think we can put that up here. And where do you get that from?
Fourth chapter of Ephesians, verse 11 and 12.
Yeah, so that comes from Ephesians chapter 4. All of those offices listed there are, you're not getting feedback from these two mics, sorry. All those offices there have the responsibility to equip the saints, evangelists being part of that. What other responsibilities do you see assigned to evangelists?
Set in order the things that are lacking and point out.
Okay, so you want me to put two things up there or one?
Well, that's two.
Okay.
Can I say two?
Yeah, sure, you did. It's kind of over now. I agree that setting things in order includes appointing leadership, but it doesn't have to be only appointing leadership. Okay? What else do you see as in the Bible as being the work of evangelists? Yeah. Now, you're exactly right. And really, when I make my new list next week on the board, that's going to be number one, because the word evangelist comes from the root evangelize. And what is that? What does that mean?
Sound out the good news.
Yeah, to sound out the good news, to be a messenger or a preacher of good tidings, to be a preacher of the gospel. And I don't know if we can say that that's certainly not their only work, but a person could argue that that might be their most important work, because that's their name. An evangelist is an evangelizer, a person who's preaching the good word. Someone go to 1 Timothy chapter 1 and read verse 3 if you could. Very good. So one of their jobs is to preach the word, and I think a related responsibility is named here in 1 Timothy chapter 1. What is that?
Correcting those who are in opposition.
Sure. There's lots of ways to describe it, but
he describes it as wage the good warfare.
Yeah. Yeah, which I think encompasses a lot of things, probably. And here in 1 Timothy chapter 1, the way I'm going to describe it for now, just so we can remember it, part of their job is to preach the word. A second part of their responsibility is to protect the word, right? Isn't that exactly what he's telling Timothy to do there in 1 Timothy? There were people who were distracted, who were resisting the efforts of the church, resisting the efforts of Jesus. And Timothy's job was to correct them, to make sure everyone understood the gospel message correctly. And so this is just how I write it. They preach the word, but they also protect the word.
Another one would be to meet, I don't know how to pronounce how to say this, but to mediate congregational problems, one called on to do so.
Okay.
And this would be two or three have an issue against an elder or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what would be a biblical reference to validate that?
Okay, I'm
you're looking for it.
Set things in order, wouldn't it be?
Yeah, I think it potentially falls into setting things in order.
There's a scripture that talks about that.
Yeah.
Bring an accusation against an elder.
Right. Yeah, we'll talk about that. I don't have that reference here either. I think that's in 1 Timothy chapter 5.
Chapter 4. It's a simple one, but I think it's really important, is be an example.
That is good.
Chapter 4, verse 12.
The last one that I'm going to add up here is enable teachers. Someone could turn over to 2 Timothy chapter 2 and read verse 2.
And the things that you have heard from me among others also.
All right. So tell us what he means. What is that verse? What's the actual work being given to Timothy there?
To train other evangelists.
I don't know if it means to train other evangelists, but it certainly means to train other people to be teachers. What were you thinking when you on training them to be evangelists?
Well, I guess maybe just the idea that you're just teach others to be able to teach others, so that there's a perpetual line of
equipping the ministry and evangelists are part of the ministry.
Yeah, so I would just take it to be even broader than that, right? That Timothy's job was to take what he knew, what he had been taught, to teach others so they could teach others also. So Timothy was never intended to be the only teacher at Ephesus. His responsibility was to teach other people so that they could teach other people as well.
1 Timothy 5:19. So do not, if he's telling Timothy what he should do or what he should not do, he said, do not receive an accusation against an emperor except with 2 or 3 witnesses.
Okay, good. Yeah, so you're right. I guess you could sort of put that in to set things in order, but probably not quite the same. We'll talk about all that next week. So next week, this will be our main discussion, is talking about the functions, responsibilities, and obligations of evangelists. We'll take a short break.